the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Welcome back, everyone. This is part two of a series that we're doing in a book called Living the RV Life, Your Ultimate Guide to Life on the Road, with authors Mark and Julie Bennett. Last week, we talked about parks, we talked about the size of coach, and then we talked about what you might run into. What I want to do this session is really talk about life on the road as both you two are living. And let's talk about number one. We live in this high-tech society with our smartphones. So let's talk about staying connected when you're on the road, access to internet, you know, even television, keeping up with the news. What are some important things that you need to consider when buying a coach, and especially if you want to stay connected?
That's a good question, Jim, because that was the very first question we had when we thought about hitting the road in an RV. It wasn't what RV should we buy or how big. It was, can we get internet? How are we going to stay connected? Because still being working age, that was the deal breaker for us. If we couldn't stay connected on the road, then there was no point getting all excited about living on the road. And so we started doing some research. We found a really great ebook called The Mobile Internet Handbook that was written by Cherie Viard and Chris Dunphy. They're from a website called Technomadia. We found their book, and we were so clueless at the time. We thought we had to get satellite, but of course these days cellular technology is so fantastic, just with your cell phones and being able to use them as personal hotspots or a little Wi-Fi, portable Wi-Fi jetpack. That's what we use, and that's what the majority of RVs that we know use these days. You know, there are three major carriers like Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile are the three biggest ones. And generally we find most RVs are on one or two of those, Verizon, AT&T. We actually have all three, which is probably a bit overkill, but that's connectivity is important to us. So we like to be connected everywhere we go. But it's definitely important to plan your travels. If connectivity is important to you, whether that is, as you say, to work or to be able to keep up with social media, you know, check in with friends and family, have a FaceTime or a Skype call to stay connected with those back at home, check your investment portfolio, to do your online banking, all of those things. You know, we need internet. That's just so important.
I do think people would be surprised at just how easy it is to stay connected, though. If you make it any priority at all, you will find that it's pretty easy to find consistent cellular connectivity that's great enough for you to do most types of work.
Right. And then there are other devices you can get, like whether it's a cellular booster or antennas and routers. And I don't want to get all technical on this call, but basically we know people who are, you know, network managers and administrators and run technology companies that are living on the road full time. So, and they have much greater needs than we do. So pretty much I think just about anyone could do it. You just invest in a system that is going to be robust enough for what your needs are.
What about satellite systems? You know, what if you know it's just a slow day? You don't want to go anyplace, or you're a football fan like I am. You want to catch up on the latest football games. What about satellite?
Yeah, a lot of RVs actually have satellite, and some of them have in motion satellites. You could actually have their passengers in the RV watching that football game while you're cruising down the road.
And tailgating's big in the RV world.
But yeah, when you're in a campground, you know, you might be mindful of, you know, where the trees are located and where the optimal signal is. But I've, you know, a lot of the campgrounds that you go to, they'll actually give you the satellite coordinates for where to connect and where to point your dish. So, but again, some of them have in motion. So it's, you're able to watch a lot of TVs and get even subscribe to TV services while on the road.
Mm-hmm. So when you pull into a park, you have a saying, I guess you call it boondocking, where you're actually not in a park. You could be in a national park or someplace. You're parked off site. When you're doing something like that versus, let's say, in a park, generally what facilities would you generally find in a park if you're planning your trip? Do you have access to, let's say, gas, cleaning out your head tank, or water? What are some of the things and facilities that you get generally when you pull into a park? In other words, other than just a place to park your coach, what are some of the amenities that might come along with that?
as you mentioned, you know, RVs are generally equipped to do time out boondocking in the middle of nowhere with the batteries and the water, onboard water tanks and wastewater storage tanks as well. But when you're in a campground, most every campground is going to have water and electric. There's some parks that will have only water or only electric. But in general, they have water and electric, and often will have sewer hookups at your site. And so your RV will function pretty much just like a regular home when you're in that, with free-flowing water and sewer. And then electricity power can range. Sometimes it's only a 15 amp. Usually it's at least 30 amp and often 50 amp. So depending on the needs of your motorhome or your RV, you'll almost always have most anything you could possibly need for your RV at the actual site. Those campgrounds that do not have a sewer hookup at the site will almost always have a dump station that you could either have a portable ability to drive some of your wastewater to that dump station or pull your RV around and dump it there.
Something else I want to get into. We talked about technology, from connection to the internet to satellite for television. I want to move into something that, you know, is very important for especially retirees on the road, and that is staying fit and healthy on the road. In other words, what kind of equipment? I mean, you can always park and go for a walk, but what if you wanted to do something like that, like a small bench, some dumbbells, you wanted to do yoga, Pilates, or TRX? Let's talk about health and fitness on the road, especially as we have a lot of clients that live in Nevada, in Arizona, where the temperatures get up to past 110 degrees. So they get in their RVs and take off for the summer. So they're on the road for 3 months or more.
Yeah. And to that weather comment you made was one that I wanted to make, is that with RVing, you generally follow the best weather, which then keeps the outdoor activities much more available to you than people who live, say, in Nevada or in, you know, southern Arizona, where it gets too hot in the summer, or in cold climates where it's too cold in the winter to get out. So you generally have better weather in general. We have seen people that carry benches and small weight sets. I would think most people do body working exercises, but I like to do a lot of cycling, and in a lot of campgrounds we stay in have pools, so you could do some swimming in those as well. And some campgrounds we stay in actually have fitness facilities. You often see pickleball and tennis and sports as well. So you do see quite a few different outdoor activities for folks in most campgrounds we're staying at. And like I said, depending on the type of park and depending on the amenities, again, you may have a fitness facility as well. I would recommend smaller hand weights and stuff instead of a large weight set, or even water-filled weights that some people use when they travel via air, because when you're traveling in an RV, one of your enemies is weight. So you wouldn't want to carry a really extensive weight set when you're traveling with your RV.
And there's a lot you can do with use body those weight too.
Yeah, body weight or those exercise bands are really great ways to get more resistance training while in an RV.
Something like TRX exercise bands. In fact, you could probably just attach them to the ladder on the back. Let's talk about food, or let's say you get sick. Are there any kind of medical supplies that you recommend? You know, I know when on my boat, I have a first aid kit. Do they have first aid kits that are made for RVs, the type of things you're likely to run into?
Not aware of any that are specifically for RVs, but just general, you know, decent first aid kit to carry simple things like, you know, aspirin and ibuprofen and bandages of various shapes and sizes and some antibiotic ointment, tweezers, alcohol wipes, you know, all those basics. That we've actually got a list of those in that chapter 6 in our book, The Living Fit and Healthy on the Road. But, you know, we always do recommend, and we find that most RVs we know, you do have to take your health a little bit more into your own hands as an RVer, because you don't have as easy access to your regular healthcare providers. So a little bit of preventative care goes a long way. We tend to do a lot of natural remedies. You know, that you'd be amazed at how many things that we've been able to sort out with things that we have on board the RV, like, you know, apple cider vinegar or iodine, hydrogen peroxide, aloe vera, and just some simple things that you can do. Just we use a website actually called Earth Clinic, where we can Google some natural remedies for that, and often it just saves us a trip out to a pharmacy to get anything, and that works pretty well. But, you know, we like chiropractic care, So we have found the Joint has a national network of chiropractic offices that we can go and get chiropractic care as we travel. We're pretty fortunate. We haven't had to use too many doctors along the way, but we do know a lot of people that if you have health situations or any treatment that you're undergoing, you can plan your travels around that. So if you have to go back once a year or twice a year for checkups or to keep, you know, track of treatment, we just tend to find that people just plan their travels around that.
Yeah, they sometimes travel their plans around that. But they also, you know, if you have medications that you need, a lot of times people will get their prescriptions through a national chain, so they can pick them up at other chain locations across the country. Or they'll do mail order medical supplies where they can get multiple months of their supplies at a time, so they don't have to have the regular picking them up.
And another unique advantage of being an RVer, and this is something that we didn't learn about until we've been on the road for quite a few months, was medical tourism. It's really big to go down to Mexico, believe it or not, for dental work, although you being in San Diego may be familiar with that. Very common. There's something like 3,000 people a day cross the border over into a town called Los Algodones in Mexico, just south of Yuma, for dental work. Very, very common. It's very, you know, now there are some places you wouldn't want to go, but there are a lot that are world class. I mean, it's very well known for medical tourism. We've been to a place there, and honestly, you could eat off the floor. It is so pristinely clean. Their technology and their systems are very advanced. In fact, more advanced than some dentists that we've visited in the US. They speak good English, and the prices are a fraction of what you pay in North America. And so it's becoming very popular now, but it's probably a little scary for some people the first time you hear about it, but do your research, of course. And you know, that's become a very, very convenient way for a lot of people to get dental care on the road, for example.
Let's talk about something that both of you are doing in reality, and that is working from the road. You know, you mentioned internet hookup, good cell phone coverage, so that you can work on a computer. Both of you have, for example, your YouTube channel, website. Talk about working on the road and how hard is that? What are things that are important one should consider? For example, I'm in the investment business and, you know, I have 6 computer screens. So if I was on the road, I would definitely want several screens to follow the markets and things that I do.
Yeah, and that's important to know what your needs are for that. You know, that is a high needs with having multiple screens like that. So that's more planning around it. And there's a lot of other, I think one of the first things you need is a healthy dose of discipline, because there's so many exciting things right outside your door when you're out traveling. So some good discipline is important, but you know, connectivity for that type of work and, you know, the screens available. There's also be mindful of the fact there's a lot of jobs that people can do that aren't online too. A lot of people do traveling work where they might work in an area that's more hands-on. Some careers are really beneficial for that.
Like tourism and hospitality. It gets very busy in Florida and Arizona in the winter, so a lot of people just work seasonally. You know, but to someone like yourself, Jim, I mean, when we hit the road, we specifically bought what's called a bunkhouse model, which is typically, you know, bunk beds for kids. We don't have kids, as we mentioned earlier. So, but Mark knew that he needed a dedicated office space to be able to close off work from the house, from life. And so we converted the bunkhouse into a dedicated office. He had a dual monitor set up. He didn't have 6 monitors like you do. I don't know, that might have been a little bit limiting there. You might need to downsize from 6. Or you could end up with an RV if that's a high value for you. There are some RVs that are 2 bedrooms, and you can actually create one of the rooms as a dedicated office. And we've definitely seen quite a few of them that have a dedicated office in a much larger space where you could set that up with 6 screens if you wanted. So it comes back to what are your priorities? What's, you know, for us, it was how can we be connected and how can Mark have a really good, ergonomic, comfortable, separate workspace? And that drove a lot of our decisions around what RV that we bought. And that worked really well for us.
It did.
In fact, we had that RV.
Yeah, and my supervisor actually complimented me as being one of the most connected people at work. And most of the rest of the folks actually had regular traditional homes. So the fact that you're out on the road.
We didn't tell them we hit the road.
Yeah, we didn't tell them we hit the road. So the fact that you know, you can definitely be a very connected when you're out traveling.
But we've met people, you know, from accountants and consultants and writers and editors and insurance agents and social media managers and share traders, investors, photographers, I mean, we have met so many diverse.
Extremely diverse.
And it's really, every time we meet someone new that does something completely different, it's very fascinating to us that, you know, if you want to do it, for most people can find a way to do it. Even nurses, traveling nurses are big.
Yeah, as the population ebbs and flows, yep. Especially to areas like hot
Arizona,
sunburning and Florida. Snowbirding areas, they need, when the population swells, they need a lot larger nursing population. So.
Yeah. And work camping, that's something that's very common as well. And a lot of people, some will work camp to be paid or some will work camp. And what that means, work camping, is basically you get a free campsite and you can earn money, or some you can get paid and get a free campsite, some you just get a free campsite in exchange for hours worked at a campground or, you know, at a park, a national or state park. And a lot of people do that just to stay busy and for the social interaction and to be engaged with people out there. They're not always doing it just to earn an income, but that's very, very popular among RVers.
Volatility is back. The stock markets are pivoting, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates, and experts are predicting another recession. How will your retirement weather the storm? Are your investments fortified? Do you have a consistent source of income? Financial Sense Wealth Management can help you answer these questions and plan for the unpredictable. We monitor the markets, interest rates, and the economy so you can focus on doing the things you enjoy most. Contact Financial Sense Wealth Management at 888-486-3939. Start planning, stop worrying, and make the most of your retirement. Call 888-486-3939 today. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Both companies doing business as Financial Sense Wealth Management.
All right, let's get down to some things that are really important. And this, it affects people in many ways. It'll affect somebody that's, for example, living in their RV full-time like you are, or let's say you happen to be retired and you live in Arizona, Nevada, you're taking off for 3 months. Let's talk about things like paying taxes, paying your banking and credit card bills, mail, or in the case of one of my clients who sold his home and basically bought an RV, they lived in that RV for 5 years, just like both of you.
And what one of the things that's really important with that, in mail forwarding companies, there's a lot of mail forwarding companies that you change your address to that address and then they collect it and then forward it to you wherever you're traveling if you're doing extended travel. But what that may also drive, if someone's going to sell their home and travel full time, is they may actually consider changing domicile, which was what state they live in, because that's a much larger decision. It's multifaceted, as you might imagine, you know, because of taxes, all different types of taxes, whether it's income, pension taxes, inheritance taxes, anything. But it can be a very complex decision. But if you do your research right, you can actually have quite a bit of financial gain from really choosing that decision wisely.
Let's talk about things like bills. Would you recommend that you get used to online banking?
Yeah, we would just in general recommend that anyway, because it's less paper and it's just simplifies your life so much. You can do so much online now. We get most of our bills electronically or set up them on auto pay, and it's just one less thing to think about. The little bit of paper mail we do get, as Mark said, goes to our mail service. We happen to have one in Texas, and then we can have that mail scanned and view it digitally, or we can just call them up and they can tell us over the phone what we've got, and then we can say, okay, we're at this campground on this date, here you go, forward the mail to us, and we have an account set up with them with a, you know, we top it up with a credit card balance and they just forward the mail to us. And, you know, we kind of get our mail on average once a month. We've actually joked, Jim, that if ever we ended up back in the stick and brick home, we'd probably still pay for the mail service because we love not going to the post office or going to our mailbox and getting all of this junk mail anymore. It's a great way to avoid junk mail. We just get the important first-class mail that we want. We just get the magazines that we subscribe to and that's it. And we're not ending up with so much junk filling our mailbox and our trash can anymore. But I think simplifying your life with that and being able to do your online banking, it's just a lot easier. It's amazing how much time that can save and, you know, prevent forgetting bills or paying them late, that kind of thing. Yeah.
And consider having some banking with a national chain so that you have a branch all across the country. It's a nice secondary backup. But like I said, we do almost everything online now.
But even as full-time RVers, you know, we legally have to have a state of domicile. You can't just hit the road and not be attached to any particular state. You need to have a driver's license. You need to be putting in your taxes. And so we kept our mail just being redirected to a family member for our first 6 months on the road to make sure that we liked it and that we were going to keep going with the lifestyle. And after about 6 months, when we realized we're going to be doing this for longer term, that's when we did our research and made the bigger decision of changing our state of domicile. And one of the benefits of that for us was not only having a professional mail company taking care of all that for us and not having to rely on our family member anymore, was we moved to a state that doesn't have state income tax, so we don't pay state income tax.
Oh,
that was a 5% increase.
I like the way you think there.
Yep, that was a 5% increase right there just by changing a driver's license. But, you know, as Mike said, there are a lot of factors to consider. That should never be someone's primary reason for deciding that. There are so many other reasons. We cover all of that in Chapter 8 of the book, Legally Speaking. We cover all that. But we've met people that even when you go to sell your house, I mean, you want to be very sure and don't just take a realtor's word for it. Do your own research. It's your responsibility that if you sell your home, and you've already changed your state of domicile to another state, you could be hit with a penalty because you're not still a resident of that state anymore. And that could be to the tunes of tens of thousands of dollars. So these are very, I mean, these are big decisions. I don't want to scare anybody here by any means, but just to know that these are big decisions. And when you do your research, you do your homework, and you are making these big decisions, you can really avoid a lot of expensive mistakes.
I want to move on to next, the final chapter in your book, and that's travel destinations and trip planning. We used to have a beach condo, and across the street was an RV park. And I know that there was almost like a 6 or 7 month reservation list to get in there. And during the summer, when people are on the road, they're driving, taking vacations, let's talk about planning a trip. And then a couple other things I think that are important. What happens about towing? Let's say something goes wrong in your coach. Let's talk about what you might be able to do on, let's say, camping memberships. Are they worth it? But let's begin by planning a trip.
Yeah. Well, you know, there are a couple of different kinds of people out there, your planners and your non-planners. Some people like to have the peace of mind of knowing that they've got the next 3, 6, 12 months planned and they know where they're going and they know when. And other people really don't enjoy that kind of a schedule at all. And I think knowing that about yourself is an important factor in deciding what kind of RV you're going to get. Because if you want a 45-foot coach and you are planning on towing a vehicle and you're not a planner, that's where things can get tricky. It's much easier to do that kind of, you know, spontaneous travel with a smaller vehicle. But, you know, we meet a lot of people that like to plan. We like to plan for the most part.
Yeah, we like to plan, especially when I had my other job and I had to be much more planted and connected for my other job. But over the years, we've become more and more free in our travel planning. We're a little bit more flexible than we had been. And in fact, earlier today, I was hanging out with a friend who's been over 10 years full-timing in RVing, and he never books his next stay until the day he's leaving where he's at. So,
and he's got a 40-foot.
And he's got a 44-foot. 44 wheel trailer, so, and two vehicles. So he's much more complex, but he's still able to do that very wildly, I guess. You know,
experienced.
Yeah, it's experience and that comfort and knowing that you can do that way. But as far as breakdowns you mentioned too, you know, there's RV shops all across the country. There's also mobile technicians, but most things that go awry in your RVs are generally things that can be fixed at home if you're at all handy. You being a sailor, you're going to be used to fixing, you know, much more handy things. And if something goes wrong in a sailboat when you're out in the middle of water, that's going to be a lot harder to get service to you than in an RV when you're just on the side of the road. But there are service providers out there. In fact, there's a lot of great DIY videos on YouTube and some really good communities to get into that can have this similar type of RV that might be able to help you troubleshoot. But as far as major mechanicals, you know, we haven't seen a whole lot. Maybe we've been lucky, but we've only had 2 times we've had to be stranded on the side of the road.
So maintenance is really important with an RV. I mean, the more, it's like with your health, the more preventative care you take, the less likely, not always guaranteed, but the less likely you're going to have issues where you, you know, get stopped in your tracks. But, you know, in terms of trip planning, of course, that's the fun part of all this, right? You know, where are we going to go? And I think if you, in general, and this is the same if you were just doing regular travel, if you're going to a popular place at a very popular time of year, it's just stands, it just makes sense that you should be planning that in advance if you want to avoid disappointment. If you want to go to Niagara Falls in the summer, you want to be booking that. If you want to go to, you know, Malibu Beach, you want to be getting a reservation there.
The Florida, hotels will be booked up the same as the RV parks. So it's, you do need some advanced planning during peak season.
Florida in the winter is one example of that. I mean, it's very highly populated here down this in the southeast, and Florida is known for being quite difficult to get into RV parks and campgrounds. We try to book as far in advance as possible for that, but then when we're going to less busy places, so certain areas of Montana, and I'm not talking about Glacier National Park, but anywhere you go in near a national park, they are generally very busy, very popular places. But some other more rural areas, we've had some of our most enjoyable stays in places that are not necessarily top of mind places that you would travel and that we would never have discovered if we hadn't had the RV. And there's one one really great way to travel, Jim, that might appeal to a lot of your listeners. It's called a Harvest Hosts, and it's a membership of wineries and farms and golf clubs now, where you can actually stay in your RV. Now, they don't mostly don't have hookups, so you need to be able to use the onboard capacities of your RV and dry camp overnight. But you get to stay for free, wake up among the vineyards or wake up right by golf course and, you know, wake up on an alpaca farm. So they're really unique travel experiences that you wouldn't otherwise get. And, you know, even just boondocking and being able to camp out on open land. We've done some amazing dry camping out in the desert southwest, Arizona, California, really plentiful in that area. It's not as easy to find that in the east part of the country. That's much easier to find in the west. But that's what we're finding now with so many campgrounds are starting to get busier and get booked up in advance, especially at those peak times, that we're, I mean, for us, we are more comfortable doing more boondocking and dry camping now. So if we can't get in somewhere, we'll just go dry camp somewhere for that day or that week. And that's not a big deal for us. So again, that comes back to what kind of a camper or a traveler are you? If you're a glamper that likes to be on a paved campsite, fully level, and have all of your water, electric, and sewer hookups all the time, and your wife likes to run the water and have a long shower and use the blow dryer every morning, then boondocking may not really be your kind of a thing. Yeah. So,
and one other question I remember you had in your question there, Jim, you had multiple pieces in that, was that you also asked about campground memberships and whether or not they're worth it. There's a lot of different types of campground memberships, some that just give you discounts on short stays and some that are larger networks that give you no overnight fee if you're staying in that network. We have a lot of articles on our website, rvlove.com, that talk about campground memberships. So if they're interested in exploring more about that, they're welcome to go there. But for us, our campground membership has been invaluable. It's been a major cost savings for us. Mm-hmm. But again, it'll depend a little bit on how you like to travel, on which memberships are most beneficial for you.
Yeah, there are quite a few out there. We cover them in Chapter 9 of the book. But you know, and so I think just getting out there and doing it, and you start to get a feel. You know, we always say to people, just try them all out. Go and try staying in this campground membership. You know, you can do that at a pretty low commitment, or go and try staying at one of these wineries, or even try overnighting in a Walmart parking lot from time to time. I know that sounds crazy to a lot of people, but when you're doing a long drive across a, you know, major interstate and you just want to pull off for the night and, you know, get a bit of shut eye and have a bit of a rest and recharge your batteries before hitting the road again, that's been a fantastic service that many Walmarts, not all Walmarts, make available to RVs. You can go into the store and stock up on your supplies and that's been a really great event. I don't know if that's always going to be the case. Cracker Barrel is another chain that does that. So again, if you're doing a big cross-country trek, you can pull into a Cracker Barrel and get up in the morning and have a nice pancake breakfast before you get on your way again. And it's just fun, you know. You just get to mix up your travels and get a feel for what you like. And I think one thing for people to to be aware of too, is that the longer you travel, the more you do it, your camping style and needs may change. We didn't even try dry camping and boondocking for our first 8 months on the road. We didn't, you know, we felt it was a very brave thing to do when we first started doing it. And that took us 8 months to do that. We know many people that have still never done an overnight in a Walmart parking lot after several years on the road. But, you know, I think we're liking the idea of doing some more of the farm and winery camping and doing some more of that, just have some really unique experiences. And just even try going to some places that you wouldn't normally think about, like looking at what's on your way to where you're going, because it really is about the journey, not the destination. You know, it's great to get to where you're planning to go to, but there are so many amazing roads and hidden gems and places along the way there. And there's some great apps like Road Trippers is a great app to be able to find places along the way. We were driving through Kansas, and anyone that's driven along I-70, that's a very, very long road across Kansas. And I'm a big Wizard of Oz fan, and we saw this big billboard at a little town called, was it Wamego? And they have the Wizard of Oz Museum. And we decided spontaneously to stop in there and break up the trip. And honestly, it was fantastic. It was just small, but it was really, really well done. And little things like that I never would have thought about or known about. And I think that's one of the great things about doing this big, long road trip is you could get to set your own schedule, go where you want to go. And
yeah, and that's a bit of advice, though, is to leave some flexibility in your schedule. Don't be so overplanned that it's rigid, because some of the best experiences are those that only are available to those who have a little bit of flexibility.
One other thing I'd like to ask as we conclude, are there any kind of tools you need to keep on board? And if something goes wrong in your coach, is there anything that is more common to go wrong than anything else?
Well, I think for all others, we'd recommend having a good roadside assistance and with towing, specifically for RVs. That would be the first thing that I would say, you know, as a membership. But in terms of actual tools to have on board, Mark?
As far as actual tools, you know, the ones that are for sure, you just want to have some regular household hand tools, you know, like screwdrivers and some small hand tools to be able to fix, because most things that go wrong are easy to fix with simple tools. I would also recommend having some tie downs or some rope or something if you ever had something that came loose, or you know, bungee cords and such. But definitely want to have sealant. You want to be on top of having any water is one of your big enemies in an RV, and so you want to be really on top of keeping it well sealed. But I think, you know, just simple basic tools. I mean, I think I carry, you know, a relatively simple tool set compared to what I needed for doing maintenance on my traditional home. Like traditional homes, it seems you need far more to be able to maintain, because part of it, you're maintaining yards and such usually.
And finally, as a result, I have a friend that wanted me to put this question to you. He's looking at a Class B on the Mercedes platform versus a, let's say, Class A, larger coach, but it would be gasoline versus the Mercedes, which would be diesel. Is there any preference or anything that you would recommend, gasoline versus diesel?
Well, those are two very different animals in that those are two very different coaches as well. You know, that Mercedes Sprinter van on the diesel chassis in a Class B, that's going to be highly fuel efficient. So if you're traveling at a fast pace and you're moving all around, that fuel economy is going to be very beneficial to you. A gas-powered Class A, well, for example, that Class B, you might see fuel economy up in the teens with that. But in the gas-powered Class A, your fuel economy is going to be much lower, probably around 6 or 7 miles per gallon. So it'll be because the Class A motorhome is like pushing a loaf of bread down the road. They're not very aerodynamically efficient. So if you go fast, you're going to spend a lot of money in fuel with that, and you're going to have less power to weight ratio with that. Now, furthering the gas diesel conversation, if you go with the larger coach in the diesel, you may actually get, even though it's a much larger coach, you may get 9 and even 10 miles to gallon. Even though it's much heavier and larger, because the diesel in that large coach is more efficient. So, and I would say that the Sprinter van or the large diesel coach will probably handle hills much better than that gas-powered Class A, both on the climb and on the descend, because they have better braking to weight ratios.
It also depends on how much time you're going to spend in it. Because if you're planning on full timing, a Mercedes Sprinter van might get pretty small, especially if there are two of you. Whereas you may not tow a vehicle, so you're doing the majority of your driving in that van. If you're in a larger Class A, whether it's gas or diesel, there's a greater chance you'll be likely to be towing a vehicle. So even though the fuel economy of the actual RV is lower on the Class A, you won't be driving it as much as you may a van. You'd be using your tow vehicle for getting around.
And that's
like that.
Great point that Julie makes there, because towing a car behind a larger coach won't actually change the fuel economy of towing or of driving the big coach. It will minimal impact whether it's towing a car or not. And yet when you stop, you do all your running around in a very fuel efficient car, you can end up having a greater average fuel economy than if you just had the single vehicle. So that's a great point.
Okay, Mark and Julie, as we close, why don't you tell our listeners about the courses that you get? I know I'm going to have to enroll in one, because just like sailing, I took sailing lessons, I took navigation, safety on the road, and these are the same things that apply to living the RV life. So tell them about your website and your YouTube channel, and then we'll talk about the book as we close.
Well, our YouTube channel and our blog are RV Love, RVLOVE. You can find us at rvlove.com and on YouTube as RV Love TV and on social media. The courses we offer are called RV Success School. They're online, available 24/7. You can do it at your own pace. So you can do it. You know, we've got people in, you know, all around the world that are doing it in their own time zone. So there's no time pressure on that. It's lifetime access to that material. And, you know, it's the kind of thing that it'll pay for itself in no time, because of what you end up saving in avoiding mistakes or being able to negotiate a better price. And I would say don't rely on an RV salesperson to be the person that educates you about RVs, because their job is not to educate you, it's to sell you an RV. And I think that's one mistake that people run into. But the classes are great. That's been going for about 2 years now, those courses. We've had some students report that they've literally been able to report a savings of over $15,000 to $20,000 just in what they're able to apply from a lot of the resources and education in the school. So it's as Mark said earlier, it's a way to really fast track your learning and give you a lot of peace of mind. And we've got a lot of students that have done a lot of research, but then it becomes their, you know, it's their last check, cross-checking, making sure they've dotted their I's, crossed their T's, and using it as a final way of clarifying and confirming what they've found too. And so that's become a really good tool for people.
Well, I want to mention your book, Living the RV Life, Your Ultimate Guide to Life on the Road. It's one of my beginners of gaining knowledge about this, and I just found it's very, very thorough, and it's been such a pleasure to have you both on the program. I can tell you there's three or four of us that are all thinking of getting RVs and doing caravans, and so we're all excited, and they're excited to listen to these interviews. Mark and Julie, hope to talk to you once again or maybe run into you on the road.
That would be great.
I love that, Jim. And thank you so much for having us on. It's been such a pleasure to chat today.
You bet.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.